Hello, and welcome to this episode of HBCU. I'm your host, Dee Brown, CEO. On today's episode, we're going to explore exceptional HBCU athletes. HBCUs have a rich history of producing exceptional athletes, from Jerry Rice to Jackie Robinson to Jack Spinks, just to name a few. These trailblazers have exceeded both on and off the field. Joining me on the panel today is John Smith Jr., who played football for Alcorn State University, and Omarosa Newman, who played volleyball for Central State. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Dee.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No, absolutely. The pleasure is all mine. So listen, I want to jump in by just starting with you to tell a little bit about your experience playing athletics at Central State.
Thank you so much again, Dee. I loved being a part of the Lady Marauders volleyball team. I was recruited by Coach Rosie Turner, straight out of high school, of course, and I was excited to join the team because this team was winning and they wanted to continue the winning streak. I was a volleyball setter as well as a middle hitter, so I was very tall for a setter. And so I started to play my freshman year. I was a starter. I was very, very competitive, but when we traveled, we only got to play one other HBCU, and that was Kentucky State, who was our rival, and that was always the big game. My freshman year, Dee, we beat Kentucky State. That was the highlight of my volleyball career.
So, John, I know you played football at Alcorn State University. Tell us a little bit about your experience there.
Well, it was a great experience. I played for Coach Cardale Jones, and played defense for a legendary Jackson State linebacker, Mario Kirksey. I was at Alcorn State University from 95 until 1999. It was a wonderful time beneath the shade of giant trees.
Well, look, so, you know, there's this stigma or misconception, I believe, among just the broader community that HBCUs do not produce exceptional athletes, or that they don't compete at the same level as your Power Five schools. And so what we want to do on this episode is to kind of dive in and not just talk about some of the great athletes, but also some of the great coaches who have led HBCUs to championships, ones who've gone on to play in the NFL and NBA and at the highest levels, and who have been trailblazers in the area of athletics for HBCUs. And so, John, I'm going to start by just asking you to give us a little background on Marino Chasm, the godfather.
Well, Marino Chasm, the godfather, he is known as the godfather because, you know, he didn't take any mess in the swag. You know, he ran his offense. He ran his team like the mob. He controlled everything. back in the day, when we were at Alcorn, we took a class called Adjustment to University Life. And one of the things you learn in Adjustment to University Life, you actually thought you were going to learn a whole lot about the campus and the different buildings. You did learn that, but you also learned about some of the rich tradition of the coaches and sports. Marino Chasm, he coached at Alcorn State. He was the athletic director at Southern University in his later years. He's one of the winningest coaches in SWAC football history. He's in the SWAC Hall of Fame. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's best known for the 1984 football game of Mississippi Valley State. It was called the Gunslinger versus the Godfather. And that was Archie the Gunslinger Cooley, who had Willie Satellite Totten and Jerry Rice. And they were averaging about 75 points a game in college football. And it was against Marino Chasm. He had his defense, which was led by NFL player Isaac Hope. And they dethroned, well, I wouldn't say dethroned because Valley wasn't the champions, but they knocked off the top-rated offense, and they ran across the field, and the team slid out in the middle of the field, and they slung the guns. They shot the guns at the gunslinger.
Hey, I want to know from you, when we think about exceptional athletes and coaches that come out of HBCUs, who come to your mind?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many incredible athletes. I'll start with the ladies. Of course, I have to start with the great Althea Gibson, who was the first African-American woman to win a major. I mean, this was unprecedented and incredible. She came out of FAMU. And so at the time, you know, HBCU athletes weren't really spotlighted, but the feat that she was able to win really shined a light at the time on FAMU and its accomplishments. You know, next, I've got to go down to another woman. That's William Rudolph out of Tennessee State. William was an incredible track and field athlete, but she was an Olympian. And Tennessee State, again, had a spotlight on them because here are these incredible athletes who came out of these institutions that didn't always have the best gyms and the best tracks or the best basketball courts or the best fields, but some way, somehow, they were still able to excel in the different sports that they were a part of.
You know, that's the amazing thing about it, that a lot of the facilities and practice fields at HBCUs are nowhere near the standards as they are at the Power Five schools, but yet you find athletes that come out and they're able to achieve success on the courts, on the fields, on the track, you know, at the highest level. John, I'm going to kind of bring up a name here that I think you can shed a lot of light on for the viewers. Steve McNair, you know, outstanding quarterback. Air McNair, graduated from Alcorn State University, played for the Tennessee Titans. Give us a little background on Air McNair.
Well, Steve was one of the greatest players to ever wear a football helmet, not just in the state of Mississippi, but throughout the football community. Steve was a team player. He was a team guy. The legend of Steve McNair will forever live on. I remember as an incoming recruit, we were at the Grambling State game. It was Grambling versus Alcorn State, Eddie Robinson versus Cardale Jones, Steve McNair versus Kendrick Lord. It was a high-scoring first half. The score at halftime, I think, was 35 to 29 or something like that. And the coaches were in the dressing room just coaching and on the chalkboard. And Steve walks in and he tells everybody to be quiet. And the coach was still talking. He said, "I said everybody be quiet." And coach said, "Okay, Steve, what do you got to say?" He said, "If you guys want to go to the promised land, follow me. I want to go watch the Golden Girls." And everybody got up and left the dressing room and went and watched the Golden Girls. And Steve passed for about 500 yards and rushed for about 270. The final score was maybe 63 to 59. And the only reason Alcorn didn't win is because Steve dodged about 9 defenders, spinned around in the backfield about 9 times. And when everyone thought he was going to run the ball, he threw it across his body to a man wide open in the end zone, waving his hand. But the ball was coming so fast, he dropped it.
Wow.
Steve was one of those players. If he said something, or if he came to the campus or came to the university, everything stopped, you know, yes, because Steve was in there.
Right. So, I want to make sure we keep this thing balanced out. So highlight who's another female athlete that you would spotlight as an exceptional HBCU athlete?
I'm going to name somebody that you may not be thinking about. There's a comedian who I absolutely adore. Her name is Kim Whitley. She has starred in so many different movies. And a lot of folks don't know that Kim Whitley actually played volleyball while she was at Fisk. And she credits volleyball for really helping her, you know, of course, prepare for the world, but working with teams, but also going out to Hollywood and fighting for her career. I also want to highlight someone that made history at Alcorn, and John will know that my fiance who passed away, Michael Clark Duncan, played at Alcorn State. He played basketball when he was there. He played basketball, and that was the reason that he was recruited from Chicago to Alcorn to compete. Now, out of Central State, we had some outstanding athletes as well. I'm going to have to switch over to the guys' side, though, and talk about Hugh Douglas, who played for the Eagles, and, of course, Brandon Hayes, who played for the Carolina Panthers. We've had some outstanding athletes, but I wanted to mention Kim Whitley because sometimes she doesn't get the...
Right. But you did, when you mentioned Kim Whitley, you did kind of bring another aspect of athletics into it, which is those skills you learn that help you in life and business outside of playing the actual sport. And that's one of the things that that's oftentimes missed when you think about athletes who are successful. Some of that success may not always translate onto another professional field or court or track, but it could translate into just a successful life. Now, John, Bryan Adams, basketball player out of Jackson, Mississippi, played for Piney Wood, Woods in there in Jackson, and was one of the top recruits in the nation at the time that he signed for Alcorn State University. Give us a little history on Bryan.
Okay, well, Bryan, as we call him, Wank. Wank went to Piney Wood. He was probably top 10. I think Bryan was, at one point, he was top 10 in the country. He wound up finishing up probably top 20. Bryan, you know, played in summer games against Michael Jordan when Michael Jordan was in his prime. And I'm not talking about Michael Jordan doing just a little camp. He would take college players and take them and bring them to a camp, and they would play against NBA players. And there's some YouTube footage out there of Bryan Adams giving some NBA players the business. He had a great career at Alcorn. He's an Alcorn State Hall of Famer. He's just overall, he was a great guy. He's actually from Macomb, but you know, everyone associates Piney Wood with Jackson and with his proximity. Bryan was just one of those guys. If on Mondays and Saturdays during basketball season, you were going to be in the gym to see Bryan Adams. He donned the number of 23, and we had this little section right under the basketball goal. And if you look at some of his highlights, you'll see me under the basketball goal, because when Bryan would come down and do a windmill 360 dunk, or he would do a Magic Johnson no look pass, he'd always jump into the dog pound, and the dog pound would show him a whole lot of love. And we'd run out on the court, and you know, the referees would be mad. But we'd always know one thing about Bryan Adams: it was going to be a show.
Right, right. So, I'm going to pivot back to you. Give us an HBCU athlete that may not be at the top of everyone's mind that had a major contribution to HBCU athletics.
I'm going to go to Brandon Hayes. He, again, I mentioned him, he came out of Central State University, went to play for the Carolina Panthers, but the work that he does in Muncie, Indiana, for instance, with youth and contributing to the community there, working in criminal justice and social justice, I think needs to be highlighted. He graduated from Central, went to Central for a bachelor's and a master's degree. It may not be a name that everybody knows, but certainly has tried to work to elevate HBCU athletes on another level. I do want to talk about someone who I just, one of my favorite HBCU athletes, and that's Big Doug Williams, who graduated from Grambling, of course, the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl when he was playing for Washington. We'll never forget how he beat the Broncos. I think he threw for 342 yards and became the Super Bowl MVP. So I think he deserves to be highlighted as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you. That wasn't it on the top of my mind. That's a good one, John. What about you? Who comes to your mind that made a major contribution that we may have may not have at the top of our minds right now?
Well, a lot of people probably won't know this, but I'm going to reach down and pick up my Steelers helmet. One of the greatest to ever play the game of quarterback is Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam. Joe Gilliam actually went to Tennessee State, and they called him Jefferson Street Joe. He was from Jefferson Street in Nashville. He played quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's one of the reasons I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan now. My dad was in school around the time that Joe Gilliam was playing at Tennessee State. My dad was going to Valley State, so he and Tutal Jones and Deacon Jones were all friends, so they would go up and watch Joe Gilliam a play, and he would always talk about Jefferson Street Joe. So I did my research. He's known to have the fastest release of any NFL quarterback. They say you'll never find a picture of Joe Gilliam where you can see his hand, because it's only a blur, because he released the ball so fast. And he actually played with the Pittsburgh Steelers on a couple of their Super Bowl championship teams. If you ever watched, it's a story out called Not Your Average Joe, where Terry Bradshaw actually says that Joe Gilliam was actually the best quarterback on the Pittsburgh Steelers team back in the Chuck Noll days, and that Joe Gilliam actually won the starting job, but because of some of his off the field issues or things that he had going on, he didn't complete that season. But Joe Gilliam was like 13-1 as a starting quarterback the year the Steelers won the Super Bowl, and Terry Bradshaw just got inserted into the Super Bowl. So wow. That's a Tennessee State graduate, Jefferson Street, Joe Gilliam.
All right, so I'm going to give y'all a trivia fact, and I want you to tell me who I'm talking about. HBCU graduate, 22,800-plus all-time receiving yards, more than 200 touchdowns, the most 1,000-yard receiving yard game seasons in NFL history.
Has to be Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice.
You said receiving yards. You said receiving yards. You should have made something a little harder.
Talk a little bit about Jerry.
Well, I mean, you don't have to say much about Jerry. Again, I was told Jerry Rice could catch a BB in the dark from Crawford, Mississippi. Jerry Rice went to Mississippi Valley State. Again, my daddy's alma mater. So I was at that 1984 game, sitting in the aisles, and everybody passing around their bottles and having a great time with 64,000 people. Next year, they're going to commemorate the 40th year anniversary of that football game, Alcorn State versus Mississippi Valley State, where Jerry Rice and Willie Satellite Totten, they went out and played against the Alcorn State Braves. But Jerry Rice, you know, was a household name throughout the state of Mississippi, you know, even before he got to the San Francisco 49ers, when they talked about the Satellite Express and this new run and shoot offense that Archie the Gunslinger Cooley had, where he lined up four receivers all in one line, and they all took off and went up the field. But Jerry Rice was just an outstanding receiver, great person. You never saw it, you know, you never heard about a whole lot of off-the-field issues or character issues with Jerry Rice. He was just a great guy. I always tell people all the time, you know, Jerry Rice's, your Walter Payton's, you know, most of these guys, everyone, you know, within where I grew up at, you know, wanted to be just like them. Most people, when you talked about wide receiver, you would go stand out there and hold your finger out and look at the quarterback and say, you know, take it up top, or I'm going to run a slant like Jerry Rice. You know, this was before everyone started saying you got mossed.
Right. So I'm going to just pivot a little bit to more current events. And so I want to talk about Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, his tenure at Jackson State, the controversy when he left, I guess you would say abruptly, after three seasons. What do you think, about the Prime effect and his time at Jackson State? Because obviously there are mixed emotions about, you know, how he did and what he did, but I would like to hear your take on it.
Well, first of all, I want to just share with our viewers that Deion Sanders is a proud graduate of a historically Black college and university, that's Talladega. And so he has a passion and a commitment for HBCUs. His time at Jackson State was remarkable. I mean, he led his team to championships. They won games. He raised the profile. But the pouring into his students, his athletes, and his elevating of the program as a whole needs to be celebrated. You said he left abruptly. I just think that the perception that he picked up and left in the night is an error in terms of how we look at his time there. He spent 2 years in the program and he decided to move on. I think that we should celebrate his time as opposed to looking at someone who may have just left too soon. He was called to another program, he went. I know there's a lot of controversy about that people thought that he should have stayed for a lifetime. But I believe even the time that he was there, that he changed how HBCU sports are looked at, perceived, and celebrated.
Well, you know, one of the things that I figured out about life is that a lot of times people will hold you to a standard that they won't hold themselves to, right? I don't know how, as African-Americans, we can ever be bitter or upset about a person doing something to advance themselves or advance their career or to just do something different if that's what they choose to do. And I understand that people have mixed emotions about this, and some people feel like, well, some of the things he said, you know, as if it basically mandated that he stay there for some fixed period of time. I don't know that there would have ever been a right time for him to leave, that everyone would have been happy. And I think sometimes we have to take a step back and just ask ourselves and be honest with ourselves. What would we do? You know, and, you know, there have been, you know, obviously some speculations around various reasons why he left. You know, obviously the most, I guess, floated idea is that he did it because it was in his own best interest. And I think the first law of survival is self-preservation. So, you know, it's not uncommon for people to do things that are in their own best interest. And I have not met a person. Yeah, I have not met a person that wouldn't. Leave for that type of opportunity. I think if someone say that they wouldn't, they're not being candid with themselves, or they've never been in a position to advance their lives or career to that extent. And so it's easy to say what you wouldn't do when you're not in that situation. John, but I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on that as well.
Well, one thing about it, with me being an HBCU graduate, raised in an HBCU household, I also had a brother that played at Mississippi State, PWI, holds the record most tackles in a single season at Mississippi State. But the Deion effect, you know, it was so, it took everyone by storm, and HBCUs are so warm, embracing, and they bring you in, they give you that halo. But they will take that same halo and pull it down around your neck and turn it into a noose. So I think what a lot of people in HBCU world who are true HBCU graduates through and through, they look for the Marino Kasems, the Coach Eddie Robinsons. Eddie Robinson was at Grambling maybe 60 years. I'm just going to say 60, but it was closer to 60 than it was 20. Right. Marino Kasem was at Alcorn at least 15 years. Pete Richardson was at Southern over 10 years. So the majority of the great HBCU coaches, like a Buddy Pugh who was at South Carolina State, you know, 20 plus years, most of these coaches get to an HBCU. They don't leave. You know, they stay there. You know, they don't remain stagnant, but they win, and people, you know, just really gravitate to them. Eddie Robinson, again, I use Eddie Robinson because he was at Grambling so long. He surpassed Joe Paterno's a win record in college football. And, you know, people cried when Eddie Robinson retired. You know, Eddie Robinson, you know, you could visibly tell that he was done coaching, but people did not want him on the sideline. So fast forward to Deion Sanders being there three seasons. He was there 2 years, but he was there three seasons. He had the COVID season, which was spring. Then he had the following fall. Then he had the following fall. And he did so much within that span for as the marketing aspect of it, the marketing aspect of HBCUs and putting the brand out there. Everyone liked that attention. It's kind of like, you know, once you get the pretty girl, you know, you don't want to go back to an ugly one. Once you drink from the golden chalice of being on Good Morning America, of being on CNN, you know what I mean? You're a buzzword. Jackson State University became a buzzword. We know everybody knew about the Sonic Boom of the South. Everybody knew about Walter Payton. You know, everybody knew these things. But when Deion Sanders donned the blue and red, he turned a purple and gold brave like me. I kind of almost cheered for Jackson State. So I was actually, you know, it was, you know, I knew that it would be a blow. You know, it would be a blow. It would suck some of the air out of the HBCU steam. You know, President Biden and the White House and everyone has been doing a great job with their White House and HBCU initiative. But we do know that when Deion Sanders left Jackson State, it sucked a little bit of the air out of him. So the Alcornite in me was happy he was gone because I didn't see us beating him. So I cheered a little, you know, within my soul. Like, you know, I texted a few Jacksonians and said, what you going to do now? But, you know, the business person in me understood that, you know, business wasn't going to be business as usual. You know, the sidelines have always you know, Jackson State's average attendance is 30,000, but that's 30,000 in the stands. You know, when Deion was there, you had 30,000 on the sideline. And we're talking about A-list celebrities, B-list celebrities, C-list celebrities, every media outlet in the country, you know. And that's kind of one of the things I kind of spin back to my time when I was getting recruited by Alcorn State. I was highly recruited athlete. I went to a Northwestern versus University of Illinois football game. Coach Gary Barnett walked me in a room and said, "Hey, John, you're going to be my fullback. You'll be the next Mike Allstott. I want you to block for Darnell Autry." And Darnell Autry wound up finishing third in the Heisman. He said, "Pat Fitzgerald is going to be an All-American
hey,
linebacker."
John, John, I hate to cut you off, man. This episode went really, really fast. I think that we should have had a show just on this topic. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for joining me on this episode of HBCU. To my viewers, thank you for watching. I'm your host, D. Brown, CEO. And remember, without you, there's no me.